podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Goodbye, cut replays. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of this season's Real Football Cast. As always, I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes, we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League and the FA Cup over the past few days, while in addition to that, there are also some popular activities that have caught our eye and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. It's been another incredible week of football, and this week it's two up top. That means leading the line and wearing the captain's armband is Carl. So Carl, how have you been since we last spoke?
Yeah, really good, thanks, Dan. Spurs haven't been able to sort of ruin once, so that's been nice, but what a hectic weekend of football we've got to talk about, and plenty of controversy.
Oh, absolutely. This is what the podcast is made for, these crazy weekends of football. Also joining us, of course, is Liverpool fan Stuart. Stuart, it's been a mixed week, of course, but how are you, my friend?
Yeah, very good. I mean, obviously, we've had bad on field, slightly good on field, and then an absolute head mind meld of all kind of rumours as to who's going to take over. So it's been a bit mixed bag of everything over the last 7 days. But yeah, and that's just for us, let alone everyone else. So let's get into it.
Absolutely. Right, before we do, let's do the social media bits. Otherwise, we'll be talking into the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Also, the podcast has its own account, which is at RealFootballPod. And if you want to become a shareholder, all you need to do is follow and join our very elite members club. Talking of clubs, I'm delighted to announce we're now part of the UK's first ever sports podcast network, that being Sports Social. Check out the URL and all the links posted throughout the week on the Real Football Pod account. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. If you use that platform, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like us, leave a review so we move up the league table. Also, the easiest way to find all the links is by going to linktree.com/realfootballcast, but adopting the R and the E, you get 10 podcast platforms to choose from. It's never been easier to listen to this show. Right then, it's time to go live. Where should we go first? We can go to the FA Cup. We'll go to the on-field matters in a moment. First, we need to focus on the even hotter topic, that being the decision to scrap FA Cup replays for next season. Now, Carl, it's certainly not a popular one, but as we've alluded to on this show for many seasons now, it's always been coming.
Yeah, it has, isn't it, Dan? And like as you say, it's not a popular one because I think, you know, people of a certain age and, you know, the FA Cup means a lot to us, doesn't it? You know, it goes back to almost being, you know, as prestigious as winning a league. So for those of us of a certain age, you know, the FA Cup and all the romance behind it and part of the tradition was, you know, these cup replays that you get and obviously what they can mean to the smaller sides and, you know, a smaller team getting a big team at their ground, etc. And, you know, if they manage to get a draw, they get them back to their ground where they get a big bumper payday, get to play at somewhere like Old Trafford or the Emirates or White Hart Lane, Anfield. So to lose that, it's... You know, it doesn't sit right, but I think, yeah, we've always said, haven't we, that, you know, if you're going to knock down games, then replays and, you know, possibly, you know, we've spoke about the League Cup before possibly being, you know, got rid of to save some space. So I think this was probably inevitable. It was coming down the line, you know, we were seeing the end of extra time, straight into penalties, that sort of thing. So I guess we just need to hope it does what the impact is and gives us a better cup competition. But it certainly smacks of the bigger clubs basically having the say of what they want and how they want cup competitions to work.
Yeah, we'll get to that point in a moment. I just want to bring in Stuart and talk about the outrage that we've seen across the last few days. To me, obviously, this outrage is warranted because I don't agree with the decision to scrap replays. I like the romantic side of it, but I'm also an idealist and true to the fact that it doesn't fit anymore. So I think a lot of people have kind of put their head above the parapet in the last few days and sort of said, oh, well, it's just a disgraceful decision. But these are the same people that when the FA Cup will be playing go, well, it's the FA Cup weekend, I'm not going to watch it, I'm going to do something with the family. Or, do you know what I mean? Like they're not the religious viewing, they'll quite easily give that week up. So to me, it's kind of like the old boozer down the road that everyone cries foul when it gets shut down, but no one went to it in its last few years of operation. So is it really a case of the FA Cup as a whole that if you don't love it, you are going to lose it in the end?
Oh, yeah, there's the Woolworths effect in full force here. just to sort of age myself in a very particular way. What I would say is, I think, and again, for the longer discussion, I'll try and get ahead of the curve here, because everyone listening that supports anyone lower down than six in the Premier League will even with the introduction, I'm a Liverpool fan, so they're just going to immediately think that, like, I am the worst of everything. So I'm not going to lean into that necessarily, but I do want to mention a couple of things. And there's hypocrisy all over the scale here in terms of FA Cup replays. If we're talking about fans, if we want to care about how fans travel and how fans make plans and how we're able to try and, I don't know, give them more of a room to, lead the way, as it were, rather than TV or anything else. Replays are games that are scheduled 10 days or even sometimes less in advance. And there's a scramble for tickets. The travel is awful. And I think that's not the reason to go, we definitely need to get rid. But on the other end as well, I do feel like if we're saying, and by the way, I need to preface this by saying that in my very, very younger days, which is to say, I'd say 10, 15 years ago now, when I first started covering football, I covered when Worcester City were at Agborough and played at Kidderminster's ground for a couple of years. And during that period, I think it was 2014, actually, exactly 10 years ago, they went on a cup run that eventually ended up, and we're talking about going to Anfield, going to Old Trafford, going to Stamford Bridge, going to Arsenal, the Premier League hallowed grounds of it. They went to the Ricoh Arena in Coventry and they beat Coventry 2-1. And I heard discussions after that game of how the revenue just to get to that point would keep them going for about 5, 6, 7 years. And they wouldn't have to worry about any issues. So I understand the idea of going to grounds and doing this. And by the way, I'd like to point out, I don't think that was a replay. I just think that was the draw, which leads me on to my next point, which is if replays are the things that are going to keep teams viable, doesn't that say a lot about the system we have? And the idea of, I don't think teams lower down than League Two, the conference and so on and so forth, should basically have their entire fortune granted to them by the virtue of whether they're plucked out of a hat one before or one after a so-called big side or a side with a good allocation that they can get the money from. Unfortunately, there is the cynicism and the probable reality of the fact of all of these reforms, none of it will address that balance. But I do think that a lot of people are just coming down on this with an absolute hammer of, oh, this is terrible, the Premier League are doing this, that and the other. And there is a lot of that, don't get me wrong. But there are things that need to be addressed if we want to make sure that not just the FA Cup is as it is. Because everyone's been talking about it being dead now for about 20 years since Man United left and went to Brazil. It's not. It's just the fact, and again, like, it's this thing of, oh, two random. I remember Portsmouth Cardiff, I think, was a final one time, and no one cared.
Well, so exactly.
It's not the cup itself. It's what it means, like, full stop. And if it is a means to sort of keep intact the pyramid of English football, then yes, by all means, we need to go in and change things and make sure that that is the case. And I don't think getting rid of replays is going to pull the rug from everyone out. Although I can understand everyone else going, this is terrible.
Well, let's look at it from a League One, League Two point of view, Carl, because they've been the most vocal in terms of their displeasure of this decision. When you look at the scrapping of replays across the board, is it harsh for them in the sense of round one and two? It doesn't affect the Premier League clubs at all because they've come in at round three. Could you at least keep those going? Or is the uniformity that we're going to see more sensible, that everyone knows where they stand at the start of the competition?
Yeah, I think once you make that decision, I think you've got to uniform it across the whole competition. It's a bit like the whole thing with VAR, isn't it, Dan, where you have these ties where, you know, if it's held at Tottenham's ground, we that will use VAR. If we're at Bolton or, you know, Burton Albion's ground, there won't be no VAR. And I don't agree with that. You know, ultimately, if one team could possibly benefit from the use of video technology, then that needs to be the same across the whole competition. And if it can't be, then you don't use it at all. So I sort of think if we're going to bring this in, whether we like it or not, if that is what's going to happen, and it is, then we need to say, well, replays are being scrapped in general, and ties, you know, whatever round will basically get completed there and then, you know, because I think ultimately the smaller clubs, what they're really saying is listen, we want that opportunity of being in that third round hat, possibly drawing Man United away or Man United at home, where we then have an incentive that if we can get a result, we take them back to Old Trafford and we get a massive bumper payday. You know, I think we've got to, it's one or the other. We can't have it in early rounds and then not in the later rounds just to suit certain, what could be seen as certain teams. So if we're going to do it, let's do it from the beginning. And then, you know, because ultimately as well, if we're looking at one of the reasons for this is, you know, reducing fixture congestion, then it's those lower teams that really could moan about fixture congestions because they play a lot more games than most Premier League sides do in a season.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I think also, Stuart, we need to look at the FA Cup as a whole in the sense that Premier League clubs have vested interest because obviously they want to be in it but not really be tasked too hard to try and win it. You've got these clubs in League One and Two who want the replays for extra revenue to keep them alive. Then you've got all the non-league clubs at the bottom of the pyramid who just want to be a part of the FA Cup. Anecdotal evidence, the team I volunteer for, Newcastle Blue Star, if they win the playoffs this season, they'll be in the extra preliminary round of the FA Cup. Now, when this news was broken, they didn't care about the loss of replays. All they want to be is in the FA Cup. So, because it means so much to so many different aspects of the English game, is this a fundamental problem? Like, how do you suit and solve the issue for 700 plus clubs?
Yeah, I think that's the bottom line. And it's a 92 issue, but it's not even a 92 issue. It's a full on, right down to the bottom English Premier issue. And this is part of the glory and the greatness of the FA Cup is that, like, if you're in it at any point, in any realm of the lower leagues, you could still win enough games. I mean, I think you have to win more games to get to round one if you are in the ultimate preliminaries than like I think it's almost double than the actual games you'd have to win from round one. But at the same time, the fact that you can get there in the first place and try your hand against league clubs and then obviously get to round three and try your hand against Premier League clubs, that's the beauty of it. And when we talk about a magic of a cup, it's the idea that anyone can draw anyone. And it's not, we talk about like scrapping replays and all this. And like the idea that it's not even seeded anymore, it's never been seeded, but the idea that that hasn't been muted and we're not going to get into a realm of hierarchy where it completely separates the elites and the haves from the have nots. I do think that you are, ultimately, if you've got that many voices at a table, really going to struggle to satisfy everyone. The Premier League teams want less games. The lower league teams want the opportunity to play more games if they're going to get the revenue. And the lower teams than that just want the opportunity at the opportunity. And closing this particular avenue off, it does seem to be, you're only really appealing to those at the top. And it really is. And again, I come at it from a really high-end view of, I hear the call of, basically, it's just hypocrisy. Like, I can say, and I've heard Pep say it, I've heard Arteta say it, I've heard Klopp say it, Ten Hag said it about, we want less games. And then they go and organise. And I know it's not, I think if you actually spoke to the managers, they don't really want this. But the idea of you can't do what's happened over the last, from a PR perspective, if nothing else, over the last few weeks and go, we need this, we need that. the FA does what they do, and then there are, I think Tottenham playing Man City 3 days after the season in Melbourne. And again, even if it's not the exact fixture, there'll be other Premier League teams that are playing abroad. I remember a couple of years ago, we played in Ireland about 2 days after the season finished. And on one end, I think about it as, yeah, I actually understand this. And I know you're not going to get it all right, but I think you might be able to try and please everyone some way or another. But then when you actually go through it and you're only pleasing one group of teams, and then that group of teams actually kind of takes the piss with that response, it's only going to infuriate everyone else even more.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of noses out of joint. The row about replays will certainly rumble on. There's been enough press releases and statements over the past few days. But the row about VAR will always rumble on because, Carl, Coventry thought they had completed the greatest FA comeback of all. Unfortunately, the technology had other ideas. Now, do the Sky Blues have reasons to grumble about the decision itself, or is it just a call we'd expect in the modern game?
Well, I think it's a call we all expect now in the modern game, isn't it? Whether it's the right one or not, because I guess we've kind of probably been robbed of one of the greatest FA comebacks of all time, you know, by the fact that a toenail was ahead of another person's toenail. And that, I think, is the real disappointing fact of it. You know, by the letter of the law and the way VAR works, he looks like he's just off. But for me, and I think for every football fan across the country, at no point in time do I believe that that should be given offside. You know, I want to see proper daylight when you can say, well, yeah, he was definitely ahead of the defender. You know, we've said before, haven't we, the fact that a bloke maybe wears a size 10 and the defender wears a size 9 football boot, that's determining offside, I don't think is right. And as I say, it robbed us in a way of one of probably what was one of the best games I've watched in a long while, and one that, you know, if that goal had been given, we would have been talking about that game for years to come. And again, it would have just kind of cemented that fact of the magic of the FA Cup. But we have to sit there and say we've seen it plenty of times so far recently, you know, with how VAR works. And, you know, possibly until that maybe changes one way or another, we'll continue to see offsides like that.
Yeah, there's a huge irony in the week running up to it, the FA Cup replays are scrapped. We have this huge FA Cup story, which is then diminished right at the very end chapter. And in that end chapter, Stuart, Lee Dixon on commentary was saying, well, you know, really, we should give this goal because it adds to the fairy tale. I mean, it's a great sentiment, everything, but is the energy of this kind of anger and frustration about VAR magnified even more because it's denied the comeback of all comebacks? Were it 2-1 to Manchester United at the time, and it, you know, just takes the game into extra time or whatever, or I don't know, so an inconsequential goal in the grand scheme of things, we wouldn't really be having such a furore of discussion. So have we been guilty of being caught up in the magnitude of it all, or have Coventry really got a case to bear here?
I think the not controversy. I don't want to lean into that word, but unfortunately, it's the easiest one that springs to mind. And not least of all, because the line is drawn very clearly over Bissaka's foot. And again, that's the fault of the technology as it's used right now by the Premier League, the FA, the English football in general, which is to say that it's supposed to be in. I mean, as I say this, I'm wondering whether this is even the case, but it's supposed to be not quite infallible, but at least definitive. And when you see it drawn over someone's foot, then you think, oh, that's someone's drawn those lines. So, like, an actual human being has decided where the line has gone for the Man United player and where the line has gone for the Coventry player. Obviously, I think we're about to have semi-automated offsides in either next year or... weirdly, I think we talked about this the other week, where it's going to come in next year, but like halfway through, so that's going to confuse things even more. But the point I'm making is that if it's a person drawing those lines, I thought this at the time, the person drawing those lines could easily have drawn them in a way that was onside. And that's where you go, well, hang on, that's not what video technology should be used for. And it's not what... I mean, if you're going to do that, we may as well just have refereeing and linesmen, because if there's no video replay, we see that. And if it's given, we all go, yeah, if it's not given, we all go, that's really unlucky. But we all move on. But because we've got the opportunity to draw lines and to go to these monitors and to do this and all the fancy, wonderful world of technology that we have, that we think that we're going to come to a better decision. And if anything, we've come to a worse decision, because it's one thing, it's almost Schrodinger's offside. It's both is and it isn't. Whereas in a previous incarnation, we would have accepted the decision. In a future incarnation, we probably would have accepted the decision a lot easier, because the actual technology would have been a bit more refined. And now we're in this really weird middle place where a guy's kind of decided whether Coventry have won that game or not. And it feels a little bittersweet. But I do agree with your point. If Man United were maybe 3-1 up or 3-0 up, and this was just to let them have a consolation, then, you know, the lines might have been drawn differently. That's not a conspiracy. That's just the way human beings work.
Well, we'll get to conspiracy theories later in the show, because there's a certain club who have blown up the football world with their talk over the weekend. But before we do, I want to talk about Manchester United, Carl, because they're going to be in their second FA Cup final in as many years. But is there a sense that this victory comes at what cost for Erik ten Hag? Because when you look at the manner of performance in the last half an hour of the regulation time and extra time, well, I mean, that's the kind of performance which lingers in the mind of Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and it might be enough regardless of what happens for ten Hag in the rest of the season for him to be shown the exit door.
Yeah, I mean, I would be interested to see if he'd even got on the coach if they'd actually lost that game in the end, because I think as a club, you would probably be tempted to make a decision very quickly on the back of a real humiliating defeat like that. The fact they've managed to get themselves through, it's really weird that you can win a cup semi-final but come out as the ultimate losers, and everyone's still basically talking about you as though you're a laughing stock. And Man United have managed that this weekend. I would have said before that game, I don't think Ten Hag is the right man for Man United. And I think with the new ownership sort of model going in there, you know, Mr. Radcliffe, I get the impression there's probably going to be a change being made. It's probably just the fact that he's managed to get through that game and now they're in a final that might just keep him in that job till the end of the season. But you'd have to sit there and think, if you're a Man United fan, you would have no confidence whatsoever that you think you can go toe-to-toe with Man City in that final and give them a run for their money based off the back of performances lately. So I think he's a very lucky man they managed to get through. But I think, yeah, if you're the ownership now, you're sitting there thinking, I just don't think this guy is the right man for it. You know, he's not the only one to blame. You know, the players, there's a lot of players there that I think that needs a big, massive rebuild. But I think it starts from the top. And I'll be very surprised if we see him in the dugout come the start of next season.
Yeah, I mean, the only strange way that football works sometimes is that United could win the FA Cup. That might be enough for Ratcliffe to go, well, actually, let's give him another season. But then they might be a disaster next season. So sometimes when you actually win, it creates a backward step. But with that being said, I don't think they're going to win the FA Cup final, because they were rotten on Sunday, even though they won. With that in mind, Stuart, what did you make of the post-match celebrations for Manchester United? Or the lack thereof, shall I say? Because Rasmus Højlund smashed his penalty home, run to the sponsorship hoardings, no teammates with him. So do you reckon that was out of pure embarrassment from the teammates? And King, there's no way we can celebrate this one. We'd have a real nerve, real cheek if we did. Do they just have to play it cool for their own humility, shall we say?
I mean, there's no humility in that club. Anthony trying to give it large.
True. Yes, true.
The Coventry players and fans. It's a little bit like me waving a tenner at Elon Musk, to be honest with you. When my biases are clear, I'm very reluctant to go in two-footed. But in this case, you have to go in two-footed. The idea that if Ten Hag wins the FA Cup, could keep his job, and that might be a double-edged sword for Man United. I think there's more chance of Liverpool winning the Champions League this year than Man United winning the FA Cup. Man City beat Watford 6-0, and it was an absolute massacre. I expect more in the final. And it's weird in a way that you say, Man United, they'll get through this game, and there's any sort of sense of embarrassment. I think there's a part of it where it's what is the point of even doing it? If they were playing a side of a lesser a standard, and maybe even of a lesser association, like an Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, for example, then it might be a little bit more even. But Man City absolutely know how to put the lead on Man United and take them for a walk. And it will be no different. And if anything, actually, it might be more embarrassing for Manchester United how little the scoreline is. They could do them 2-0 or 3-1, and they've absolutely kept them at arm's length for the entire game. It is an absolute... And I say this as someone, by the way, that Man United have played an absolute spoiler in our season. They've completely thrown a spanner in the works and dragged us to the ground. And whatever happens to us in the future, I have infinitely more confidence of us going forward next year, having no idea who our manager is going to be, compared to if this current Man United side... And again, I think it's fair to say, Ten Hag not entirely to blame, but they are on a highway to absolute purgatory because the players are either individualistic or past their best. Contracts have been given out to players. And again, Casemiro, not to like single someone out, played really well last season and was a very key part of what was... looked to be at least a springboard for Ten Hag and Man United, but every decision they ever make, it seems to backfire in one way or another. And yes, they've got to a second FA Cup final, but in terms of future prospects, it is a bit of a false. It's not even a false dawn. It's a false sky. And in terms of their celebrations, I'd be like, Hoyland celebrate. Okay, he's the one that scores the penalty, so I can kind of get I can't score a penalty in a five-a-side. So in an FA Cup semi-final, I would still find a way to celebrate regardless of circumstance. But the rest of the squad and their reaction told you everything. And it wasn't even as though that it was a dogged performance where Coventry put 11 men behind the ball. Man United couldn't quite break it down, and there were signs there. They were 3-0 up. And Coventry brought it back. And not only did they bring it back, they brought it back in a way that made you think that, like, Ten Hag had dropped the controller or his Xbox had, like, actually completely lost the batteries. But it's so, so bittersweet. Like, because Coventry, again, they have their victory and in the sense of the scenes that were with the fans and ironically enough, Man City fans tried to claim that as their own. But this FA Cup final is one of these where it's you know, that ending and that sort of lack of, I don't know, passion. It's almost the antithesis of what we think of the FA Cup when it comes to, Man United have won. Fantastic. They're about to get absolutely destroyed by Man City. Congratulations. No one cares. We'll all watch something else.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right in the sense it's another all Big Six final and you wish for something different, but you're not going to get it. And the narrative now is kind of just like, oh, you're waiting for Man City to win, really. So that's the deal we're going to have to deal with. And Man City obviously atoned for their exit in the Champions League and Bernardo Silva atoned for his penalty miss. Carl, with that all said, Chelsea and the chances they had, primarily Nicholas Jackson, they're going to point to themselves and think, how on earth are we not in the final?
Yeah, and, you know, Chelsea would just look back on it. It's a bit like with the League Cup final, weren't they? Where they'll be sitting there just thinking, we had good enough chances and we should really have buried this game. And yet we've come out losing it somehow. And ultimately, it probably does Poch no favours whatsoever, does it? Because it just doesn't help with that sort of like nearly man tag that he's got in English football and the fact that he's not a winner and he can't get anything over the line. Unfortunately, I think he just had, you know, that Nicholas Jackson, I've watched him a lot this season. I don't know how he's managed to get himself a starting lineup at Chelsea because he doesn't look like he could finish his dinner. And he had so many chances. It was unbelievable. And say Chelsea will just be looking back with massive regret because they should really have put a tired Man City to bed.
They certainly should have. As for Bernardo Silva, Stuart, we must focus on his penalty miss in midweek. There's two schools of thought. First one being it's smart goalkeeping from Andrew Lunin, and the fact that he doesn't move either side, he just stands as a statue, collects the ball. Or it's an absolutely awful effort from Bernardo Silva from 12 yards. Which direction are you going in?
Oh, this is interesting, because I have a third.
Oh, okay.
I have a shooter on the hill, and his name is Kepa.
Oh, yes.
Because
yes.
Bernardo Silva took a penalty against Kepa, I think in a League Cup final. Could be a League Cup game. And the penalty itself was straight down the middle and a kind of rushed, because he's not one of those guys that takes regular penalties. And I don't know exactly how much information can be relayed during the melee of the end of extra time to the actual shootout itself. But Kepa definitely did, and I've seen the clip, have a word. And I don't know whether he said he's going to go straight down the middle, just hold on to it. But any information in those kind of circumstances is more beneficial. And especially, like, if the Madrid keeper dives the other way and it gets straight down the middle, then it's always, with those penalties, it's always, you will look horrendous if it doesn't come off. And I think, as Bernardo Silva is not necessarily a regular penalty taker, I think the gist of it is trying to get it over with as quickly as possible. And I definitely subscribe to that. So whether it was fully Kepa's inside knowledge or whether it was just the keeper actually got lucky, I don't even think it's that poor of a penalty. I just think it's that's the risk that happens when you take that kind of spot kick. And again, it's a strange game, that Real Madrid-Man City game, because I didn't feel like Real Madrid had any real control of it until probably the winning spot kick. So that's what Real Madrid do to you. They absolutely make you think that they're going to lose, and then somehow they win. Ancelotti ball is the best.
Well, actually, let's give a certain hat tip to Luka Modric as well, because he missed the first Real Madrid penalty, then smashed the ball in the crowd. I think that delay wouldn't have helped Bernardo Silva. Then the case that you put forward, Stuart, I think those combination of factors led to Man City's exit. But now, the big juicy topic we've all been waiting to discuss, Nottingham Forest, because in all this FA Cup drama, there was some Premier League action over the weekend as well. We're going to Goodison Park because Everton picked up a huge win, Cole. That's not really the story. The story is Nottingham Forest and their fallout with the referee. They had three cast-iron penalty shouts. Do you wonder how they didn't get at least one that afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think all three of them are penalties, aren't they? And we've seen all three instances like that be given as penalties this season. So you can definitely understand where Forrest's anger has come from. And, you know, you can only think Everton have kind of, you know, managed to get away with one there. And Forrest, rightly, you know, they do have a right to be aggrieved and upset. But it's the manner of how they've now kind of gone on to express that upset by giving a fan access to their social medias for the weekend.
Well, let's build on that then, Stuart, because as Cole says, it's a really strange way to show your displeasure. Obviously, you'd have a manager maybe as the mouthpiece. You can imagine Nuno sort of saying, look, you know, we've had three penalty shouts waved away, it's not gone our way, and that's probably the end of it. But no, Nottingham Forest have gone a much higher level this time. Their social media goes on a big rant. It ends with they are considering their options, but really, what options have they now got?
I mean, they could make a big stink on social media, which it appears to be. And also, by the way, their next home game is against Man City, so I'm all for if they get some beneficiary decisions from this. But I think the Premier League, the FA, everyone has made an absolute rod for their back. I said this when it came to the Luis Diaz goal at White Hart Lane that wasn't given. And it's sort of, not quite, but the sequel to that, in the sense that once that happened and everything that followed from it, and there's a lot of Everton Forest general football banter on social media, especially in regard to Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, about, oh, they wanted a replay. No one really wanted it, but what they did was they opened enough of a Pandora's box to allow this kind of furore to dominate the play. And also, as well, like, we've got Mark Clachtenberg, who is doing articles in one of the awful, awful British media newspapers. And at no point is it mentioned that he actually is an employee of Nottingham Forest. And also, like, far be it for him to talk about integrity when he's telling off Wolf from Gladiators on a Saturday evening. So the whole thing is an absolute mess. The only way, as diabolical as this sounds, the only way I would take any of this is if the audio does get released and the audio is basically, is that a pen? No, I'm a Luton fan. I can't possibly give it.
Well, that would probably be the only way that you could then have extra recourse to say, look, it's got to be replayed. Whether that comes to light or not, Carl, Nottingham Forest have asked for the three audio clips in a similar vein to the Tottenham Liverpool farce that Stuart just mentioned. So do you reckon Harold Webb is going to make these available just to try and put this one to bed as quick as possible?
I think he has to, Dan. When you know, let's take Forest's reaction and the way they've gone about it, which I don't think anyone agrees with at all. But you do have to just look in at those decisions as a football fan and as the authorities. You do have to say, we need to understand why those decisions were not given as penalties, especially when we've seen incidents like that given in the last few weeks, let alone the season. You know, we only have to look at the weekend and see the penalty that Coventry got for the handball.
Exactly.
To sit there and go, well, the arm is as just as much as out as Wan-Bissaka's. Again, the kick from behind. It wasn't long ago we saw this at Newcastle, was it, against West Ham,
yep,
where Newcastle get the penalty because the guy kicks from behind. So we definitely need to have the audio for these incidences to be able to confirm, why is this not given? Why were these not given? And if you're not going to give these, why have these previous penalties been given for what is essentially the same thing? And I think we say this every week. This is the biggest thing that frustrates football fans, is there is no consistency about what is being given. Not even 1 week to week now. We're talking match to match. You know, a set of officials are giving a decision in one match and 20 minutes later, a different set of officials are not giving the same thing in another match. And this is what's completely unacceptable. And yeah, for me, this is why we need to hear what went on and what the officials' view of why they didn't give those penalties were.
Now, Stuart, in all of this, the word corruption has been bandied out again. Now, Stan Collymore was quite quick to address this point, and he said that for every time this phrase is used, the confidence in officials gets eroded. Ultimately, that has a knock-on effect that it depletes the talent pools of referees because people think, why on earth would I want to do that job? Because I'm just going to get criticised week in, week out, regardless. He then made the ultimate statement of, look, if this game is corrupt, it's time for people to start putting up evidence or shutting up completely. For me, I don't think the game is corrupt. I don't think there's a underclass of, you know, scams going on throughout the game. I think it's just ineptitude. Has Stan Collymore got a point that if it really is to the point where people are this aggrieved, they've really got to start showing evidence without just banning this word about?
Yeah, a huge, huge leap between an organisation, a group of people, in this case referees, who are just really, really bad at their job, and some cabal sitting down. And it's interesting, actually, look, how this cabal sits down week after week and goes, OK, well, now we want Liverpool to win the league, but now we want Arsenal to win the league, but now we want Everton to not be relegated, but now we want Forest to be relegated, but now we want Man City to win the league. And is it that their meetings must go on forever? Like, I don't know how you extrapolate anything other than the word you use, which is ineptitude. And I will caveat this with saying their job's really, really hard. Like, you can get 99.9% of the decisions right. And I also think the same applies to most footballers, to be fair, as well. Forwards less so than goalkeepers. But the bottom line is you do most things right, and then you get one thing wrong, and then that's the whole game changed. And in some drastic circumstances, that's a season changed, an entire career or a club sort of story changed, if it's like that big of a decision. And this is partly why referees are scared to give certain decisions in certain circumstances. I get it, it's human. But I don't think that our reaction to it should be to try and detract or take away. Because, when we had the controversy at the start of the season with VAR and the good process, I remember the reaction to that immediately. And again, part of this has happened over the weekend with Mike Dean going, how dare you attack the referees? When Mike Dean's gone on TV and said, I didn't send a guy to the monitor because he'd had a bit of a bad game and he was my mate. I think what Carl said earlier, every football match in the Premier League, if you want to do it to the degree, or if you want to, like, I think this helps them rather than helps us. But just the audio should be readily available. Like Gary Neville, I think, or the Sky commentary team, or whoever's doing the game, whether it's Sky BT, TNT, Satanta, whoever, going back in the day, they have the audio for the VAR room. It should be readily available to the point where you can explain the decisions, not even necessarily in the moment, but at least we've got the time. It doesn't need to be recalled a week later, 2 weeks later. It's just there for all the teams to hear. So, again, Carl made a brilliant point, which is these games are being refereed on an individual basis. Each referee doesn't necessarily apply the rules of the game. They apply their interpretation of the rules of the game. And again, football is not like cricket. It's not like rugby, even to a lesser degree. It's a very nuanced sport, like what is a handball, what is offside. And again, like, offside should be fairly straightforward, but it isn't. It's minutiae of degrees and frames. And so all of it's really hard. But if we were able to listen to their thought process, I think it would not only make their job easier because we'd understand it, I think it would make our lives easier because we'd know what the thresholds were.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Just make it always available, and then all this kind of perceived corruption scandal can be quite easily brushed away. But, Cole, as Stuart mentioned, Mark Clattenburg plays a very interesting role in all this. He's now acting as poacher-turned-gamekeeper in his role as referee analyst at Nottingham Forest. Do you think his statements after the game have only muddied these waters further?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, his role is a really bizarre one, isn't it, at Forest? And, you know, there could be some way that you say Forest might be trying to get ahead of the curve and, you know, we'll suddenly see lots of teams employing former referees to kind of maybe give them an edge. But, like, as you say, with what he's come out and said this weekend, you just don't see how it can help the situation at all. But then at the end of the day as well, are we surprised? Because I think, you know, when you look at Mark Clattenburg and his kind of career and his sort of ego, you have to sit there and say, well, this is a guy that likes to put himself in the limelight and isn't afraid to kind of maybe look at creating a little bit of controversy. And he's certainly done that. And I can imagine there'll be certain people who are not too happy with some of the stuff that he's come out with.
Well, Stuart, in terms of Nottingham Forest's image now in the relegation battle, have they become the bad guys all of a sudden, the pantomime villain, as it were? Are neutrals looking at the club and thinking, do you know what? I hope they get relegated.
Yeah, that would be funny after all. That they've actually managed to talk themselves into a position where the referees and everyone else is going to try and make them go down, as opposed to just... It's just... the comically, almost absurdly awful officiating that has put them in this position. The bottom line is, for as bad as it has been, they are outside of the relegation zone by a point with four games to go. Regardless of officiating up until this point, and if it gets worse, then I'll hold my hands up because it's been pretty bad. But if they do go down, I don't think it will be because of the referees. It will be because they didn't pick up enough points in the four games and or indeed the 38 games across the whole of the season that were presented to them. It's really difficult in a VAR world to try and replicate the idea that, because Alex Ferguson used to do a really good job of making sure that if a referee or not even a specific referee, but just if a refereeing performance wasn't up to his particular standard, he put pressure. Mourinho was very good at it as well. That the next game, they'd be able to highlight a specific factor or something that they'd be able to use as like a 1% edge. I don't think you can do that now. And again, as I mentioned before, Forest's next game is against Manchester City. So I am all fingers, toes and all appendages crossed that they get 17,000 penalties. But at the same time, it's really hard to try and say, oh, well, they're not going to get this or they are going to get this. Because at the end of the day, you can't get a penalty if you... And again, bear in mind, this is coming off the back of a game where they should have had at least one, maybe two, maybe three penalties. But if they perform badly, if they don't get into the opposition box in the next few games that they've got... Again, Man City is a perfect example. They could turn around and go, well, we've had a really poor performance from the referee again. And it's like, well, you didn't have an attack. So I don't know what happens from here. They might be able to use it as a crutch, but you would hope it would be more of a, okay. And again, very much a page out of Ferguson's book. The world's against us. We've got four games to go. Let's make sure if anyone sends us down, it's us being bad rather than the referees being bad.
Well, Man City up next, Burnley on the final day of the season. And Carl, we did touch on Burnley's, should we say, faint survival hopes a couple of weeks ago. However, those hopes have certainly increased after a comfortable win at Sheffield United. You wouldn't rule them out all of a sudden, would you?
No, it's really tight down there. And, you know, all you can do is put performances in like that and beat the teams that you feel like you should have a chance against. And that was a really good win at the weekend, and one that you kind of feel for Sheffield United really put some nails in that coffin for them. And it does give Burnley a glimmer of hope. And you just, you know, football is all about momentum. They now just need to try and make sure that they can take that, you know, the momentum from that win into the next couple of performances. And if, you know, if they can get another win and another draw, all of a sudden they'll really fancy their chances of being in with a fight.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to overtake Nottingham Forest now. They just got to keep it live for the final day, and then who knows? You know, you don't want to be the team which has been above the dotted line for so long against a team which has then clawed its way out to near safety. You wouldn't want to be in that position. You'd want to be Burnley on that final day. So if they can just keep Forest in range, you never know. But Stuart, as for Sheffield United, I think we've really run out of ways to dissect how bad their season has been. Saturday, for example, you only have to look at goals 1 and 2 conceded as proof of how bad they've been defensively.
Oh, you say we've run out of ways. I think I've got one for you.
Okay.
At present, Sheffield United have conceded 88 goals. And this is with four games to play. Derby County, who went down with 11 points in 08-09, conceded 89.
Oh.
So, basically, Burnley have to keep four clean sheets to avoid the record of... It's not the record of goals conceded, because obviously Swindon over 100. But again, it feels like something they could be going for if they want to go for records. But in terms of a real disappointing, a real low ebb, it never really got going for them. I remember very vividly murmurs at the start of the season of Sheffield United selling players that were, you know, of their... top, not, you know, they weren't going to tear the Premier League up, but they were better players, and somehow they ended up in a way worse off this season than the team that went up from the Championship last year. So they have, it's a complete write-off. I think I said a couple of weeks ago that maybe you can try and hope to get a couple of wins to see things through for the future. I think we're now at a stage where it's like, maybe if we don't beat Swindon's goals record, and bear in mind as well, Swindon's goals record was with four more games. So, you know, those are the kind of goals they're going for at this point. It is and has been an absolute nightmare.
It has. I mean, if that's the only kind of glimmer of light you've got is not being a team which concedes 100 goals plus, I mean, it does sort of highlight how bad the Blades have been this season. Burnley's hopes have improved, as we just touched on. Luton's hopes have worsened though, Cole. A 5-1 defeat at home to Brentford at the weekend. Is that the one that maybe sinks the hatches for good?
I think, do you know what, Dan? I think it could be, and not just because of the fact they haven't got the 3 points. I think it's the manner of defeat, which I think really kind of sends a worrying message, because that would have been a game, Luton at home. They would have really fancied their chances of getting something out of that. And, you know, if you, when you're ticking off your fixtures, you'd be looking and going, yeah, Brentford at home, that's one that I think we really stand a chance in. And the fact that they were brushed aside so convincingly and they were so poor, I think that's a real worry. And that, like I say, that manner of that defeat would make me think this is the wrong time of the season to be on the end of a hammering like that against a team like Brentford, who, no disrespect, they're not a bad side, but they certainly haven't had the same sort of seasons as the first two that they've been here. So, yeah, I think for Luton, I'd be worried that that might just seal their fate this year. Unless, obviously, like as you say, Dan, a bit like with Burnley, if they can just get themselves back in and make sure that even if they're below that relegation line, it's only by like a point. And then obviously, you know, fate may step in after that. But yeah, I'll be worried about Luton now after that performance.
Yeah, they've got Everton at home coming up, haven't they? I think, again, another 6 pointer. But really, when you look at the Brentford game, it was a winnable one, because Brentford, as you say, have not really pulled up many trees, if at all, this season. And if you are going to stay up, it's always about your home ground being a fortress, and to have that fortress demolished with a 5-1 defeat, you do start to worry. It's almost a kind of defeat that you would have expected Luton to be handed at the start of the season, and then we would have all gone, it's a typical Luton, what chances do they have to survive, they're a basket case, etc. But over that middle stretch of the season, we obviously kind of bought into Luton a bit more, like with Ross Barkley and Andros Townsend kind of pulling up their bootstraps and really sort of adding experience to a young Luton team, and you kind of thought, maybe they've got something. And I just think the last couple of months, or maybe, you know, the last month or so, have just kind of put Luton back in a regression phase, and I think that's probably the obvious signs of what we saw on Saturday, and it doesn't bode too well. Stuart, let's go to South London now. Crystal Palace wasted no time on Sunday as they made very light work of West Ham at Selhurst Park. For so long now, Eagles fans have wished that Eze and Elise were fit at the same time. They certainly got that wish at the weekend.
Well, I don't know if it's... maybe sometimes you get, not quite Stockholm Syndrome, but you get something in your own head that you think the form or the fixtures don't necessarily bear out. And for whatever reason, I've always had this thing from Patrick Vieira, even when things were going really badly wrong for him, that this Crystal Palace side could and has the opportunity to put everything in the right place. They've got the pieces. Whether they can put them together is not sure. And then when they got handed by Man City the other week, I was like, okay, maybe I am really just completely focusing on the fact that all they ever do is derail our title challenges. And then they went and beat us the following week at Anfield. So the players that they have and the system... And do you know what? It's not even a player system coaching issue. It's a, we are at this part of the season. They have no real pressure or sort of looking down a trapdoor. And it's more of a case of what can we glean? What can we hope? What can we learn for next season? And it's almost the flip side again for the game they played at the weekend against West Ham, where it's, they're out of Europe. Moyes is almost certainly leaving now. And this is a manager who the West Ham fan base, even with the best will in the world, weren't glued to, shall we say. And I just feel like it's the fluctuations of hope and despair in football, in that whether it's true or not, and whether this is the case going on to next season, Palace feel to me like a side on the uptick, and West Ham feel to me like a side on the downward curve. And as you mentioned, when you get players of that quality on the pitch, finally clicking together in the way they did, it really easy in the Premier League to get a game running away with you, and Palace did exactly that. And whatever happens between now and the end of the season for them, they're going to be looking in the summer going, what amazing things are we going to go on to? I don't think they're... if you push me, I would say dark horse for Europe next season. That's a hot take before the summer's even started. But for West Ham, you can easily see how they can be looking at things going, oh, I don't know what the next 12 months are going to bring. And that is literally a sort of roller coaster of the Premier League of emotions as you can possibly get in one particular fixture.
Yeah, it could be a sliding doors moment in terms of next season. The trajectories could be going in a different direction. Carl, let's go over that match very quickly. Jean-Philippe Mateta is not really a man we talk about on the show much, if at all, really, only because it's always about Elise and Eze. He has scored in his last five home games. I think it's 10 for the season. Is he going to be Palace's answer going forward for next season in terms of that central role, or do they need to go out and get another forward?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because, you know, when you look at him and the goals he scored, you are sitting there thinking there's a position there that's up for grabs at Palace. And if he continues the form he showed recently, then you'd say, well, he's got a good shout at being given a chance to try and do that. I just wonder whether Palace, if they really are potentially going to try and turn things around and push on from here, they might need to go out and get themselves another front man that you maybe have got a bit more resilience and reliance on to get the goals. I think the interesting thing from a Palace point of view is going to be what happens with Elise and Eze come the end of the season, because I think if they lose those two, then I'd struggle to see how they can kind of lift themselves and bring in the sort of quality that could give them maybe a surprise push for a European place, because I think losing those two could really be a killer blow. But it will depend on what their summer activity is like. But he can only do what he's doing by sticking the ball in the back of the net right now, and he's doing that reasonably well, you'd have to say.
Yeah, he's doing the right things. I think it always feels like it's a pivotal summer for Palace. You know, we've had Zaha for many seasons. Could they keep him? If they keep him, what happens? You get the same feeling with Eze and Elise now. Maybe one of them goes. I think if they both go, there'll be real trouble. But Oliver Glasner might be able to sell him a project and say, look, you know, give me a full season at least. Give me 12 months. Let's see what we can do. And then we will discuss you potentially moving on. So it's always going to be interesting in South London. It's also interesting in the West Midlands, Stuart, because Aston Villa beat Bournemouth 3-1. They are 6 points clear of Spurs, admittedly playing two games more. But when you look at Spurs' running, have Aston Villa almost got themselves over the top four line?
I mean, there was a bit of a, especially when, funny enough, Spurs went to Villa and demolished them. You did wonder whether it might be a case of they would fall away, especially with European ambitions, hopes and dreams. And obviously that's turned it. One of the things that I find really fascinating over the weekend is that Pep made such a fuss about when they were playing and the gap that Man City had in between the Champions League and the FA Cup semi-final. And Villa had the exact same gap. In fact, it might have even been shorter, but Emery just does the job. And obviously as well, the thing that might just see Villa home is Emery signing a new deal today,
yeah,
as we record, not that long before. And it's fascinating, and especially like if I look at a certain wall chart of potential managers to replace a certain German, how quickly Steven Gerrard has gone up that list compared to where he's looked. Like, if he'd have stayed at Rangers for 12 months, this would have been an absolute slam dunk. But where they were, Villa this is, before Emery took over to now, is night and day. And the job he's done, there is an argument to be manager of the year there. Obviously, Premier League title and all that sort of withstanding. You could only do points on the board in terms of, are they going to see it home, especially now that fifth, which I was so certain would be on the board for a Champions League place, is now kind of off. So get the wins, keep going. And what they've given themselves now is a cushion, in the sense of they're going to have a really emotional couple of weeks with the semi-final. But because they've got that cushion, it's not as imperative of, oh, we've got to play Olympiacos on Sunday and Thursday. We've got Liverpool on Monday, which I think is the game in between at Villa Park. And then we've got Olympiacos again. And if there was one point in it, and again, games in hand. But, you know, I feel like they've given themselves enough of an opportunity now to at the very least, take it to the final day and give themselves an opportunity of not just the European trophy, but top four football, which is hats off to Emery and hats off to Villa.
But gradually, I'd have to agree with that. Cole, Arsenal needed to bounce back after defeats to Villa and Bayern in the past week. Their win over Wolves was certainly the perfect tonic for Mikel Arteta's men.
Yeah, that was a good result, wasn't it, Dan? And one that you sit there and go, that was a difficult place to go. Wolves can be very hit and miss. They can either be really good or pretty poor. And Wolves weren't bad on the day, but Arsenal just had too much about them to get the job done. And given the last couple of performances they've had and the disappointments, they'd be pleased to get a win on the board and keep their title challenge going for now.
And Chelsea will no doubt roll over for them in midweek. Stuart, you're also playing midweek. Let's very quickly focus on the weekend's activity. Liverpool also profited from Man City's league inactivity at the weekend. Like Arsenal, you found a win after league and Europe disappointments and a near ideal response at Fulham.
Yeah, funny that, because we weren't actually that good. But while the entire world was watching Man United and Coventry put on that display, I was potentially one of about four people watching the other game that was going on at the time. Trent looked good, having come back from injury. Really interesting team setup with no Salah. We've got an interesting week with Everton and West Ham away to come. We'll see where we are at the end of that. But with Everton sort of pretty much safe, I'm hoping they... I mean, it's been 0-0 three times out of the last five. So I'd be very surprised if it was that. But still some obstacles to hurdle.
Well, we'll look at those two hurdled obstacles in next week's show, because we've hit full time. And all I need to do is do the admin, which is as simple as thanking my two Podcast members for some fantastic chat this week. Who knows where the Premier League title race will go? Who knows if FA Cup replays will come back? But I do know that, Stuart, top work as always. I look forward to your next outing.
Absolute pleasure as always.
Cheers, mate. And Cole, thanks for being the captain's arm man this week. I hope you'll join me next time.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Dan.
Absolutely. Right, cheers, guys, and also to the listeners out there. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. And until next time, goodbye.
Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.